Welcome to Jack's Journal, brought to you by 104.5 WOKV. Eye health is an important component of our overall health. Joining us to talk about this is Dr. Jeffrey Levinson. Dr. Levinson is a board-certified ophthalmologist and fellow of the American Board of Ophthalmology. Dr. Levinson, thank you for joining us and for taking the time to talk about what is really a very important topic.
Christine, thanks so much for having me.
So about between 14 and 15% of Jacksonville's population is 65 or older, and that is the target group, right, for cataracts?
So cataracts can occur at any age. Even babies can be born with cataracts, but most cataracts are age-related, and most people with cataracts are over the age of 60, yeah.
Okay.
The older you get, the higher the likelihood of developing a cataract.
And do we know what causes cataracts?
For the most part, no. There are instances in which cataracts can be caused by certain medicines or surgery or injuries, but most cataracts are just age-related and of unknown cause. The cataracts, what we call it when the lens inside the eye, which is supposed to be crystal clear, starts getting thicker and denser and cloudier. And it appears to be an age-related phenomenon that in most instances doesn't have any identifiable proximate cause.
Okay, and so you said, though, babies can be born with it.
Yeah. Sometimes babies are born with what we call congenital cataracts, and that's a whole different problem. Congenital cataracts are fixed these days in the first few weeks of life. The earlier we get to them, the earlier we fix them, the greater the likelihood of restoring normal vision. And so every baby, when they're born, is screened for cataracts by the pediatrician right at the time that they're born and in the days after birth.
Okay, do we see any genetic link for cataracts?
Most cataracts don't have any genetic predisposition. There are families with a tendency towards early cataracts, but they're rare. They're few and far between. And the vast majority of people with cataracts don't have any genetic predisposition to it. Having said that, most everybody has a family member who's had cataract surgery, because most everybody who's lucky enough to live long enough will ultimately develop a cataract. Not always a surgical cataract, one that's bad enough to require surgery, but cataracts are a normal part of getting older. And so most everybody's parents or aunts or uncles has had cataract surgery. And as cataract surgery has gotten better and better, and we do cataract surgery at earlier stages of visual limitation, that'll be the case more and more. It's also true that in the United States today, 11,000 people every day have their 65th birthday. So the number of people who are old is getting more and more prevalent, and the incidence of cataract surgery is going up and up and up. Last year, there were probably 4 million cataract surgeries done in the United States.
Wow, that's incredible. And you mentioned that cataract surgery has changed a little bit over the years. It seems to me personally, I remember a time when grandparents or great-grandparents were talking about the fact that they had to wait for the cataract to ripen. What is that? Is that still the case? And what did that mean?
Yeah, so cataract surgery used to be a risky surgery with a meaningful risk of complications. And so we used to wait until people were really visually disabled before we would fix their cataract. And we would call that waiting for a cataract to get ripe. Nowadays, cataract surgery takes about 10 minutes. It's done without having to put you to sleep or put you in the hospital. People get up 10 minutes after their surgery and go home, and the next day they go back to working and driving and going to the gym. And the surgery is perhaps the single most successful surgery ever devised by mankind. The likelihood in the setting of an otherwise healthy eye of getting all your vision back is on the order of 98 or 99%. So nowadays we don't wait until people are blind before they get cataract surgery. We wait until they have visual symptoms that are affecting their life.
And if you have
it's changed enormously over the course of the last 30 years.
And if you have cataracts, does that mean you could potentially go blind?
So if a cataract isn't treated, little by little, it gets worse and worse. My hobby is traveling overseas doing cataract surgery. About a month ago, I was at a town called Erdaneta in the Philippines, and we saw 500 people who were completely blind or nearly completely blind from cataracts. So sure, untreated cataracts cause blindness. In the United States, it's rare to see somebody who's blind from cataracts because we fix them. We see an occasional person. There are roughly 8% of Americans, 12% of Floridians who don't have access to health insurance. So we occasionally see people blind from cataracts just because they can't afford the surgery. But overwhelmingly, we find ways in the United States to get surgery done, even in people who don't have health insurance. And so it's rare to see blindness from cataracts. Having said that, yeah, they get worse and worse until we fix them.
And if someone does go blind because of a cataract, is it reversible?
Sure. That's the beauty of cataracts. I can travel overseas. I can see 1,000 blind people. And in a week, we can fix them all. And it doesn't matter whether we fixed it the first moment it arises or once somebody's completely blind. When we fix a cataract, vision comes back to normal, as long as it's just a cataract.
Okay. And in the Jacksonville market, we're very lucky because we have some folks who are kind of at the forefront of providing cataract surgery and technology for the know-how and how to deal with this. Who should people reach out to if they do?
Yeah. So it's interesting. Jacksonville is actually sort of the nidus of innovation for the United States. Johnson & Johnson Vision, which is one of the biggest ophthalmic manufacturers and innovators in the cataract field, is headquartered right here in Jacksonville. It's a company with 4,000 employees, and a great deal of research and innovation comes right out of Jacksonville. There are also probably 100 board-certified ophthalmologists in the city of Jacksonville, 50 of whom do cataract surgery. So there are plenty of resources and plenty of opportunity to get cataract surgery done for people who need it. The other thing to note now is that when people get cataracts today, our goal is not just to fix the cataract and restore their vision. We can, at the same time, use special intraocular lenses that eliminate the need for glasses. So used to be we'd take out a cataract, we'd put in a plastic lens, and people would get glasses afterwards. Nowadays, we can most often use implants that eliminate the need for glasses, both at distance and up near if people prefer.
And those implants successful for vision?
Overwhelmingly so, yeah. Overwhelmingly so, yeah. There's a little margin for error, but overwhelmingly we can give people what they need these days. We can correct nearsightedness and farsightedness and astigmatism and also what we call presbyopia, the difficulty that older people have reading without glasses. All those things can now be corrected with carefully designed and carefully placed intraocular lenses. So it's a new world for people who have cataracts, and most often we can get people seeing well and out of glasses with cataract surgery these days.
Dr. Levinson, one more question. How do people know, or if they suspect they have a cataract, are there certain things that they should be looking for?
So the interesting thing is that when it's time for cataract surgery, I don't have to tell my patients, they know. And the way they know is they're having trouble seeing. It's harder to read, it's harder to drive, it's harder to see the print on the bottom of the TV or pick up the newspaper and read it. Cataracts cause visual loss. So when people have cataracts, they're aware that something's up. And people should, over the age of 40, should see an eye doctor every year. But when vision worsens, it comes to the attention of an optometrist or an ophthalmologist. And if people are noticing worsening vision, they should come in and get checked.
Okay, and if people want to reach out to you, how can they do so?
So my group is called Levinson Eye Associates. We have 5 offices all around the city. Our main phone number is 904-366-3781.
For more information on cataracts and the importance of eye health, you can reach out to Dr. Levinson or visit clearervisionforyou.com. And now WOKV's Rich Jones talks with Jackie Culver, the Vice President of Philanthropy for Feeding Northeast Florida. Feeding Northeast Florida is the largest food bank serving Baker, Bradford, Clay, Duval, Flagler, Nassau, Putnam, and St. John's counties. The group has served more than 264,000 meals and about 85,000 meals a day. They've also distributed almost 32 million pounds of food throughout Northeast Florida.
Our region's largest food bank is celebrating the grand opening of its new campus, its forever home, on Old Kings Road. And Jackie Culver is with Feeding Northeast Florida. And we've talked about this for many, many months in the campaign that I believe still continues on the fundraising side of things. But how pivotal of a moment is today for Feeding Northeast Florida as you look out to the future, Jackie?
Rich, can you believe we're actually here?
Yeah, I know.
We've been talking about this forever. This is pivotal. We have gone from two small, inefficient warehouses to state-of-the-art 110,000 square foot campus where we're going to be able to continue to efficiently serve the people in our community who are facing food insecurity.
Wow. Being able to bring it together, how big of a deal is that? Because for those who don't know your current setup or the existing setup since your founding here in Northeast Florida, how difficult has that been to manage based on how separate the two facilities are?
So we had two, as you said, separate facilities, and our main facility on Edgewood, which was about 25,000 square feet total, we didn't even have an actual freezer. We were working out of three freezer trucks that just sat in our parking lot. But we were, you know, the little engine that could. We're the youngest food bank in the Feeding America Network, celebrating 10 years this year. And so this is pivotal to us. We have state-of-the-art coolers, freezer, we can take more volunteers. Last year, we had over 13,000 volunteers, and that was with us only being able to have 30 people at a time volunteering in our warehouse. Now we can have 150, 200 people volunteering.
Does this also allow you to increase the amount of mobile food pantries that you do?
Oh, yeah. It allows us to crease everything that we do. And having this additional, you know, cold storage allows us to have more produce, more fresh food that we're putting out in the community. I think people have the perception that food bank food is all peanut butter and mac and cheese. But we're putting out beautiful produce, meats, dairy items, along with those dry goods also. So this is just it's just wonderful for us.
Why is it important to put those kinds of selections out into the community versus the things that you mentioned, like mac and cheese and peanut butter?
Because we want people to be healthy, Rich. Everyone has the right to enough healthy food. And the thing is, we have enough food. There is enough food in this world for everyone. It's just a lack of access. And that can be that you just don't have a store in your neighborhood that you can get to. You know, you have to take four buses to get to a grocery store. Or, you know, a lot of our community is living paycheck to paycheck, and they're one car, you know, car repair away from not being able to cover their bills. So this is where we step in, and we want to make sure that our community is nourished and flourishing.
In terms of the campaign, is it concluded at this point, or are you still actively in the campaign mode from the community?
No, we're in the public phase now of our campaign. So we have an overall goal of $25 million, and we're about $4 million shy right now. So, yeah, so we are open to touring, showing people the campus, and finishing out this campaign shortly.
Well, congratulations on where you're at now and continued success on the effort to continue to hit that goal and beyond and serve the food insecure in our community.
We're ready. We are ready, Rich.
I'll bet. Jackie Culver with Feeding Northeast Florida. Great team behind it. And if you have ever seen their mobile food pantries out and about in the community doing just incredible work, and you can certainly join that effort and perhaps be a part of one of those next mobile food pantries around. Countless hundreds of man hours went into stadium negotiations these last 8 months. And while two men led the public side, they both quickly praised the effort of those not in the spotlight. I sat down with Jaguars President Mark Lamping and the City of Jacksonville's lead negotiator Mike Weinstein to find out how this public-private partnership will work when construction of a renovated stadium begins.
You know, it was a long process, and I was really excited when we reached the last phase of that process, which was the introduction of the legislation in front of City Council, because we knew one way or another this process was going to come to a conclusion, and very thankful that it came to a successful conclusion.
Was there something that didn't make it to the end that you wish would have? Are you able to share?
Well, there's no question. There's some things that we would have preferred to have in the agreement, and I know there's things that the city would have preferred to have in the agreement, but there's no perfect deal. There's just a perfect outcome, and I think we reached that perfect outcome.
And Mike, the mayor said you guys should write a book about burn the ships. What does she mean by that? And what would that book look like? And are you writing it?
Well, I haven't thought about that, but there are some steps that I could do that would be interesting for the community. But she really is excited. Her comment about how she felt when we first got the team 30 years ago, she has said that at every huddle that we've been at. She definitely feels that this is a first of many steps, but a necessary step to make downtown all that it can be and make Jacksonville all that it can be.
Mark, you mentioned the potential in partnerships. Will you continue to partner with the city in the next phase of this on getting the community benefits agreement fully across the line, leveraging some of that partnership that you have? And what does that look like?
Well, absolutely. You know, in a perfect world, the community benefits agreement would have stayed with the legislation as it was originally proposed. It became apparent fairly early on during the debate that that was probably not possible. But we are committed to do everything we can to ensure that that program is restored to its full $300 million funding. The Jaguars' financial commitment stays there. And we're going to advocate on behalf of the city.
Did you hear, Mike, in debate in these meetings, and I was especially struck by all the people from Eastside in Tuesday City Council meeting talking about the investment. Is that personal to you? Because it's really personal to Out East.
Yes, and the culmination of all those people coming was the result of many meetings the Jaguars had separately with the community and that I had separately with the community to build what ended up being in the community benefit agreement. Right from the beginning, they were going to make a statement that they felt that it was appropriate for them to be included in this process. And for many reasons, I learned so much about that area, the history of that area. The Jaguars have been helping and doing things there since they've been here. So it wasn't a surprise. Some people may be surprised to the extent that the Jaguars in the city were looking towards really making this a pilot program and really providing the resources to make Out East and the neighboring communities something very special. And it would need to be in order to develop that whole area of the city going north from the complex. It needs to come along with it.
And Mark Lampion, you talked about the apprenticeship and how important and vital that was going to be as part of this deal. What does that ultimately look like once construction can begin, and how local do you want to be with this project?
Well, we want to be as local as possible. You know, in an ideal world, 100% of the companies that work on it would be from Northeast Florida. 100% of the people that work on the site would be from Northeast Florida. You know, that is an aspirational goal. It's probably not possible because there's just not the capacity in the construction industry. But the apprenticeship program is something really important. That's the first time that has been done. Anyone who's involved in construction here in Duval County understands that there's a real shortage of construction trade labor, and this apprentice program will certainly help in terms of the development of construction workers through the apprentice program and on to journeyman status.
When we talk about the name of the stadium, naming rights, when does that negotiation begin? Does EverBank have a first right of refusal? Do you go to EverBank first, and what does that look like now next?
Well, we couldn't be more pleased with the partnership we have with EverBank. That existing agreement expires before the new stadium will open. They obviously have the opportunity to continue as naming rights partner. They will certainly be the first entity that we will talk to, and other than that, we'd just be speculating.
Mike Weinstein with the city, lead negotiator. As you had that, there were a lot of people who were behind the scenes on that as well, as I'm sure you probably want to give them credit. Briefly, how much time do you think went into this from a city negotiation standpoint, manpower? Have you thought that, estimated that by chance?
Well, I think a half a dozen city employees you could probably think work full time for many, many months. But we had a lot of effort from outside as well. We had a Sidley Austin law firm. And Gil Bain, a construction company, are part of the team as well. So we had lots of different people. The general counsel's office really stepped up. They were phenomenal, especially towards the end. We really pushed not only our group of lawyers. And I tell people that the first meeting that we went to, there were 14 people in the room. 13 of us were lawyers. So we knew we had a real challenge getting to the end. But it all worked out.
I'm just fascinated with the big largesse of the numbers, how you arrive at the split that ultimately will happen. Can you just give one example of going forward? Will it be signing a check after one construction part is done? Give me an example of what it's going to look like, and how are the two sides looking evenly at that, Mike?
Well, we started from the beginning, tried to make this appear to be, in reality, be as much of a partnership as possible. So literally, there are things throughout the lease and throughout construction that we do together, and it'll get down to the specifics of when we get an invoice, each invoice will be paid partly by us and partly by them. So at the end, we will both have spent our entire allocation at the same time.
Driving over the Hart Bridge coming today, Mark, I just kind of had a different feeling looking at the stadium. When you think about, you're the business side of it, and it's been 4 years, and you're about to just enjoy a little bit of a break. If you close your eyes at night and you're drifting off to sleep, can you see and smell what this is going to be like, and what comes to mind initially for you?
Well, I'm just thankful that, there was one person who had the financial capacity and had the belief and confidence in Jacksonville to make this happen, and that's Shad Khan. So none of this happens without Shad and his family's commitment. And, you know, to be able to ensure that NFL football stays here in Northeast Florida for generations to come, and to do it in a way where the impact will be felt throughout the entire community, it's exactly where we had hoped we would end up at.
I don't want to get too ahead of it, but the next phase ultimately beyond the community benefits agreement is what other entertainment possibilities are out there. Are you already 4 years out from something like that, like you were at the stadium, or are you envisioning that? Where are you at with that?
Well, one thing for sure is very few people would disagree that downtown Jacksonville still needs an entertainment center as part of what the city has to offer. Nothing has changed over the past 4 or 5 years to change that. We also know that for the stadium to be as successful as it possibly can be and to attract as many non-NFL events as possible, there needs to be things for people to do before and after events, and not just the shortage of hotel rooms. So the need is still there. We understand that it's going to be critically important that that gets done, whether it's us that do it or someone else, that really probably doesn't matter to us, but we know that the project has to get done, and if we're the only one that is in a position to do it, we certainly will do everything we can to get that done.
Do talks begin before the stadium is completed in 2028?
Well, keep in mind, we wanted the talks to start at the very beginning of this process. Yeah. You know, our goal was to do both projects at one time. Again, it became very apparent early on that strategy would not have been successful. So I would assume, knowing that the mayor still has a great desire to create this entertainment district, we see the need, I would assume we would begin discussions probably a lot sooner than later. But again, we have to go through the same process. We have to sort of figure out what's the best model, and then let's get public feedback. And then let's sit down to see if we can't make the economics work with the city.
And when on a calendar have you all circled as a date to maybe speed things up for your own negotiation, Orlando or Gainesville for 2027? Where is that?
Well, we haven't spent a lot of time focusing on it because we thought it would be wasted energy until such time that we had an agreement. We don't need to rush into it. We are now going to allocate even more resources to make sure we understand what the opportunities are in both those markets. We need to have the NFL involved in that process. So, you know, it's no rush. I'm sure owners will be really interested in hearing what our thoughts are when they consider approval of this lease. And, perhaps by the end of the year, but it doesn't have to be done by the end of the year.
Mark Lamping, Mike Weinstein, are you able to breathe a sigh of relief, maybe take a vacation as well, Mike?
No, absolutely. And to just emphasize Mark's comment, the mayor is very interested in moving towards that entertainment district as soon as possible.
Will you be the lead negotiator on that?
I do not know that.
You've been listening to Jack's Journal. For more information on the show or any of our guests, visit WOKV.com. And if you would like to be considered as a guest, email us news@WOKV.com. Thanks for listening.